You're listening to the Viral Molly Podcast. Now here's your host, Rob, on the mic.
Everyone, welcome to the Viral Volley Podcast. We're continuing the conversation of College Volleyball Weekly from volleyballmag.com. Appreciate all you guys clicking in, tapping in, all the comments and engagement we're getting, because we've got such a great crew in David Hunt from Pepperdine, Dan Friend of Lewis, and Jay Hossick of George Mason. And we're getting such great response and reviews, and I can't say how much we appreciate you guys following the game and supporting the game. It may seem a very passive way, but I mean, it gets the energy going and it gets all of us all fired up to continue following and supporting men's volleyball. So appreciate all you listeners and viewers. But I wanted to start out with some good news. We've been keeping up with what I've been calling the COVID scorecard, because starting in week five, let's keep track of the matches. Well, since then, we've gone from 8 canceled matches to 7 to 3 in last week. And one of those was due to something I've never seen in my life, but some of you in the East Coast can recognize: freezing rain affecting travel for Limestone at King. And that was the third canceled match. So we're seeing COVID, at least in a positive direction for the men's game, seeing less cancellation. So,
you know, do we get any positive ones for us getting to go to Sanford? Like, do we get some wins on that side? Like, you know, suck it COVID sort of thing. Like, how do we handle that?
Suck it COVID.
That's the hashtag for Peps matches now. Suck it COVID.
I think we were the last match in March that they played in Burnham Pavilion, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, wow. We watched that video. Yeah, we were trying to get ready. We didn't know who they were going to throw out there. But yeah, I just think it's like, yeah, we can't just let COVID take all these, you know, from us. You know, we gave a few to COVID there and got a few matches back.
Nice. I like it. Well, we're going to do a conference rundown, since all the conferences now are in play and now all the Big West teams aren't undefeated anymore, which I'm kind of upset about. But, you know, it's for a good reason. We start with Conference Carolinas. Mount Olive suffered their first loss at the hands of North Greenville University on Saturday night. Still in first place with a 4-1 record, while North Greenville's in second with a 3-1, and then Erskine in third with 2-1. But let's jump over to Jay's home conference, the EIVA. The Mason Magic is what I like to call it. You know, sitting atop EIVA, what's happening in your conference there, Jay?
Well, I mean, you know, the way the conference is shaking out right now is pretty much how the coaches felt it was going to shake down from the beginning. But we're still way early. I mean, we haven't played the meat of our conference yet. We got Penn State coming up this weekend. We've got NJIT the following weekend. And those are the other two teams that only have one loss apiece. Charleston is kind of in the middle of the pack there, getting a couple of good wins. I think the big surprise is St. Francis. They were a decent team last year, and all of a sudden this year they can't find a win, even though they've gone 5 with a couple of teams, including ours. And so you just kind of look at it and go, you know, hey, they're trying some different lineups. Fisher has been out of play for a couple of days. So they're just trying to figure out what lineup is going to work for them. And hopefully when playoff time comes around, they find that. But I think right now, NJIT, Penn State, and us seem to be the top three in the conference. And those would be the ones that are fighting it out for the right to host and maybe the right to get a bye.
Any other thoughts that you, Dan, or Dave want to add to what you're seeing in the EIVA?
I think Jay hit it. I think he's certainly the top portion of their conference. Anybody could win any night, you know what I mean? But it'll be interesting to see it kind of – they have these double swing matches, you know what I mean, so where they're playing each other 4 times. So it'll be interesting to see, because they're just kind of getting into the first quarter of it maybe, you know what I mean, in terms of that. And so I think Jay's got certainly a tough one. I think he plays Penn State this weekend. Am I right, Jay? And so
– yep.
So I think it'll be great volleyball to watch as those guys get into the thick of their conference play. So.
Yeah. Anything to add there, Dave?
Yeah, Jay. I mean, Jay knows those teams better, and it'll be interesting to see. This is the first time everybody gets into the playoff, correct? The conference playoff?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, how many coaches are taking the long-term approach, right, in terms of progress and process? And, you know, we just got to find out who can play for us and what kind of lineup. I know some coaches in years past have done that. Sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. And without a fall, I think it'll be interesting to sort of keep track of who plays what matches against who. And then at the end, you know, it's just going to be who's going to be the best team.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the only reason the EIVA is taking everybody this year is because obviously Harvard and Princeton are not able to join. And I think, you know, without letting any cats out of the bag, I think moving forward, we're going to include maybe six teams. Hopefully, we haven't made any decisions on that yet, but I think it's one of those things where, you know, we want to reward teams for working hard during the year. We don't want everybody to get in because I think there's something to be said about regular season should count for something. But, you know, when you only got six teams or seven teams, sometimes you have to do that in order to maintain a little bit of balance throughout the course of the year.
Yep. Yeah. Some of the names that are really coming out of the EIVA, I think, is NGIT. And you're seeing names like, obviously, Alvaro Gimeno with his Player of the Week last week, AVCA, but Julian Meissner, Luca Berger, and their freshman setter, Fissler, really making a mark. And, wow, got to watch your back on that team for sure in that conference.
Yeah. No, they're a handful. We've been saying for a couple of years now, NJIT's on the rise. And you know, Dan played them early this year and saw firsthand what they could possibly be like. So it's a good team. It's good for the conference. And like I said, Danny's doing a great job of recruiting, bringing the right guys into that team. And, you know, they're foreign heavy, but hey, who cares? It's a good team and they're fiery competitors. And you know, we like seeing them across the net.
Yeah. Well, let's jump over to Dan's home conference, the MIVA, which I feel like things got turned upside down after this last weekend. And Dan, you had a scare there. So why don't you talk about what's happening in your conference?
I guess it's scary. I don't know. I'm just trying to play volleyball each week. You know what I mean?
So well, you have TJ Murray. He's like a superhero.
Yeah. Well, we take a week off from COVID and then we're trying to figure out, you know, we get 4 days of practice and we go play. And so
yeah.
The first like, you know, task in terms of that and being able to kind of tackle that a little bit. And Purdue Fort Wayne's a good team. I think, you saw that with Ohio State beating Loyola, that Loyola going there. You know what I mean? And just in terms of the pieces and the teams getting better as the year goes, I think, you know, McKinney and Ball State are leading the league right now. They're undefeated. You know, McKinney's got to come to our place Friday, and I think that'll be an exciting match. And our last time we played them, we lost to them at home. So our guys are certainly motivated, and Nikki's doing a great job with those guys. And then you see Ball State and Ohio State play, so that'll be interesting. And I think it's at Ball State, so they're travel partners as well. And so. So I think that'll be good. We didn't get to play Ball State because that was that week where COVID hit us.
Mm-hmm.
That's rescheduled for the next weekend. How does Loyola bounce back with Purdue Fort Wayne? You know what I mean? In terms of their playing from that standpoint. And then Linden and Quincywood are kind of at the bottom right now. I think they've both got some good pieces. And I think that'll be one of those things where you get the conference tournament. Do those teams get to a point where they're feeling pretty good about how they're playing in another month? Yeah, lots of depth, I think, this year in our conference, for sure. So,
all right, let's have the other guys chime in. What do you guys think from an outsider perspective is happening in the MIVA?
I liked watching Bouger play. You know, I think he's the last guy to get an armband tattoo. You know, he's got that barbed wire or something, which I respect that.
I got one. Maybe I should show it, right? Yeah.
But you're older, you know. But I mean, he's 22
it's
years old.
It's called midlife crisis. So.
Yeah. Whose arms are bigger, his or yours?
Oh, Booge's one arm is bigger than both mine together.
Yeah, he looks like he lives in the weight room. So yeah.
Dan's a lover, not a fighter. Come on.
No, he's had a cool experience too. In terms of, you know, his process through club volleyball and ended up with Lewis, and he's had a good career so far. So it's cool to see guys like that have good matches. And yeah, he's a cool kid. So it's just fun to see.
All right, Jay, anything to add on what you're seeing in the MIVA?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I think anybody can beat anybody, like Dan said. And I think the real story this year for me, you know, is McKendry. I think Nikki has just done such a great job of that school. In that program. And again, she does both programs. She's head coach for both teams that are playing at the same time of the year. Both teams are doing really well. I mean, how you don't recognize that and admire it, I don't know. But, you know, hats off to her. I think they're the team that I'm going to be watching as the year progresses. I think it's easy to follow Ohio State and Ball State and Lewis and Loyola because they're all the big name programs that people know about. McKendry's the team that for the last few years has been building steadily. And I want to see them this year make it to a MIVA final. I think that'd be really, really cool. And you know what? If she gets there, don't bet against her if you're smart. So hats off to Dan. Obviously, we know he's the leader of the pack, but Nikki is the Cinderella story, no pun intended, that I think is really cool to watch.
What I wanted to ask you guys about particularly is we've been mentioning this name now that we've been butchering pretty good now. Sotiris Theopanis of Ohio State. And is that a game changer for the Buckeyes? Just curious from a coach's standpoint. Any of you can chime in.
Well, we played them, and Theopanis hadn't – I got it right. I just want to tell you. played yet. So, yeah, like Jacob Pasteur and him on the opposite ends, and then they got Martin is the other end. Yeah, I think it's going to be really, really good at the not just at the end of the year for sure. You know what I mean, in terms of where they're at. So, a pretty good squad, and Kevin Birch is a pretty good coach. So,
yeah, the Mad Greek breaking plates and breaking hearts across the country. The kid's going to be doing some good things. Super excited for that kid.
Is that his Tinder profile that you just what?
Kid's pretty good. You know, he's what, 6'3" at the biggest. And we talked about it earlier, you know, this wave of smaller guys getting chances to play at big name programs and getting a chance to start and play and show the rest of the country and the rest of the world, whoever's watching, that, you know, you can be smaller and be successful. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, we're going to jump over to the MPSF, Dave's home conference. I'm expecting spot on analysis because I know that Jordan is in the Dallas bubble for the athletes and limited leagues. He's got a lot of time to do volleyball. So
yeah. Back to just hanging with Spud, watching volleyball at home. Right. So, yeah, I mean, we got to go up to Stanford. We've mentioned this a few times. Stanford was gracious enough to fill in when Concordia got hit with COVID. Mm-hmm. So we were able to go up there. That was awesome. Being able to watch GCU battle BYU. I think it went 4-5. I believe GCU was up 2-1. And, you know, Rob, you brought up Hugo. Hugo, their opposite, played last year as well. You know, he runs a pretty fast ball. He's a good player, puts up a good block. They got two really strong left side attackers. I mean, they're just – and Worley does a good job just getting them to compete. So similar to how Nikki gets talked about, you know, Matt does a great job too, but they're not a dark horse because everyone has known that they're doing well. So they're a good team. UCLA playing USC three times, lost the first one, then won the next two. All of those were in 4. We'll see USC this week when we play them. I think them losing 2 is not a reflection of them. It's just UCLA is pretty darn good. USC's got a solid crew that, yeah, some of their guys have gotten a lot better. So we'll see. And they have their setter back who got injured last year, wasn't mm-hmm. able to set a fair amount of their matches. So Chris Hall, who's a pretty good setter of theirs. So, yeah, I think that's our rundown.
Well, the Concordia goes back into action this week after COVID protocol, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So I believe they're at UCLA, or them and UCLA are matched up a few times.
Yeah, UCLA at Concordia. Actually, they're flipping Thursday at UCLA, then Saturday at Concordia.
Yeah. So you'll see that from the Southern California schools. We'll do playing them in the same week, but we'll do a home and away with them. So we have SC. We're going to SC on Wednesday, and then SC comes us on Friday. Concordia is doing the same thing with UCLA. And then in a few weeks, we'll do the same thing with UCLA.
Excellent. Gentlemen, any other things to add about the MPSF from an outsider perspective?
I think for me, the real question is going to be Stanford. And not because is Stanford going to win it all, but more about how does Stanford go about the year with dignity and grace and compete at the highest level possible, knowing what's coming down the line. And I don't want to relate it to this because I think it does a disservice to everybody, but it's like being diagnosed with cancer and you've got a couple months to live, and you know that everywhere you go is the last time you're going to go. And the kids know that every match they play against a certain team, they're never going to see them again. And that is just heartbreaking. And so I'm really curious. I know Costi does a real nice job of training his guys up and keeping them motivated in the whole nine yards, but it just breaks your heart watching them because you know, this is it. And for such a program of such story and tradition and history, it's just heartbreaking. So I want to watch them with just, you know, every ounce of energy that I can, because you want those kids to succeed and I want them to go far. God, wouldn't it be just a fantastic story if they can come out of the MPSF, make it to the finals, and who knows what happens at that time. I mean, it's just, it's just a cinder. It's a story that Hollywood couldn't write any better, but that's what I'm going to be watching.
Yeah. All right, Dan, how about you? Any other takes on that?
I certainly agree with Stan. I think the other piece for me is BYU on the road. So how does BYU start on the road? We certainly have seen them at home and certainly back with their normal setter and playing at a high level. But I think that'll be a big piece. All the other schools are already kind of moving around a little bit at home or on the road. But that's the one team that hasn't yet. So and that'll kind of give me a little bit of how do those guys adapt. And it was interesting. 5 or 6 years ago was always kind of the thing. BYU can't play on the road. But the last few years, they've been pretty good on the road. And it hasn't affected them as much. And so are they in that same mode with this upperclassman group, or does that change a little bit with where we're at during this time? So
they played okay. They played okay at Hawaii. I mean, they only hit 600 or something night one.
That's what I mean. So, but you know as well as I do, 5 years ago, they didn't play well on the road. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the schedule before, you know, sort of handicapped them in the MPSF. It used to be always two away, two, you know, two at home, and now they're traveling a lot more. They're probably a little more used to it. So, right. No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
I'll tell you one thing. Some good ball being played in the conference now. So it's good to see all the teams back on the court, including the Big West, which I guess I will be the representative of my home conference, but I'd rather let you experts talk about it, being that only two of the teams have played and third come Wednesday night. So that's UCI, Hawaii, and UC San Diego. Irvine came in, or actually Hawaii came into Irvine, and I mean, look at the stats. Hawaii hit 400 plus every night, 405 night one, 455 night two. UC Irvine took the first set on Sunday night, played bonkers, and then all of a sudden it turned Hawaii on, and they've got a deep bench to go to because, you know, talking to Charlie beforehand, he was like, well, you're going to see we didn't come with Phillip this time around. I'm like, oh, we may stand a chance here. And it actually was a pretty decent offensive assault by Colton Cowell, Rado Parapunov, and Patrick Gassman. Last night, they only had two hitting errors going into the third set. And, you know, on night one, they had 10 service aces. They're going to get you from one of those places. And I tell you, they're playing with purpose. And it's if this is them in their first two matches, it's going to be scary to see what they're doing in about 4 weeks. So they head down to UC San Diego. Kamakali is, I mean, such a phenomenal player. Looking forward to see what he and the Tritons are going to do. And but from there, as far as what I've been hearing in the Big West, the two LA teams of Northridge and Long Beach won't get started until the first or second week of March. They're pushing later because of training. So everyone in the conference is trying to fix their schedules so they can fit Long Beach and Northridge in later on. And I guess there's some, you know, logistical things happening that have to occur before they can schedule a full years of matches or a full season worth of matches. But I wanted to get your guys' take, and we'll start with Jay on this one.
Nice. You know, Hawaii obviously is stacked top to bottom, and they're going to be a pretty tough team to beat. How about the kid, Francesco Sani, true freshman coming in from my backyard over here in Annapolis area, Maryland area, and playing opposite for his first collegiate match and doing a really nice job. Pretty stoked on that. I think the question for me with Irvine is their starter position. Garcia is a nice kid, and I know that he's going to, you know, obviously improve over the course of the year, but I'm just watching some of the sets and some things look a little wonky. And I'm just kind of wondering, is that the guy they're going to put their hopes on for the entire year, or is there another kid behind him? You would know this answer better than I would, Rob, but you know, Irvine obviously has got Schneidmiller, and they've got Static, and they've got a couple of guys that can put the ball away when they need it. I think the real question is, will Rob be able to decipher between Sonny and Schneidmiller correctly moving forward in the future? Because, you know, you butchered a couple of them every once in a while.
That's right. They're clones. I feel like they're clones.
Yeah, they do look a little bit alike, but obviously both very good players, and Sonny's got a real bright future. And so, you know, Irvine's going to be okay. I'm not worried about them. They're going to compete. NIF always does a good job of training them up. I think San Diego is one of those teams that I think had a really good year last year. The question is, can they repeat the same level of play over and over and over again? And I tend to believe yes. I think San Diego's here to stay. I think they're a team that over time is going to push in that conference for maybe moving on. And, you know, hats off to Kevin Ring. He's been sticking it out for a long time, you know, with not a lot of support from the administration, and, you know, going on from D3 to D2 to D1. And now he's got full scholarship compliments. I mean, those are the things that allow a program to start flourishing and start thriving.
Yeah. Right. You, Dan, we'll go to you next. Thoughts on the Big West.
It was neat to see people play volleyball without masks when I watched the match last night, just so you know. Hawaii is pretty good. Jacob Field has really improved from last year. So I thought he was doing some nice things with that group. And I do agree with Jay's comments. I think Irvine's got some really nice pieces. Kind of figure out what's the best flow for those pieces. That'll be pretty important. Sonny was – I liked their third game lineup last night when they went to Sonny on the left side. I think that's Sonny and
that Miller.
Pretty good. Yeah. So with the other pieces, I can't wait to see Santa Barbara. You know, I want to see Santa Barbara play. And certainly we know Long Beach were had a really good record last year, and who are their pieces and where's Northridge at. So I'm curious as those guys get going, where that all kind of lays out. I mean, I thought San Diego was great. Kyle McCauley was great last year. And so, I think there's a lot of Hawaii's the top for sure. You know what I mean? And then who are the pieces that are under them? And but like you said, Rob, this is how Hawaii is playing in week one. They've got some pretty good pieces. So where are they going to be at in 2 months or 3 months or things like that? And can they battle COVID off and all those other things that will kind of come up as the season goes on? So,
you know, it's oddly enough, as speaking to Charlie, I this is public knowledge, but I don't know if you heard on the broadcast, but right as he was leaving, his son had to be hospitalized. So appendicitis. A 10-year-old boy, Kekua, you know, he left the hospital yesterday. So good news there for Charlie, but I know he was dealing with a lot coming in, and you as coaches deal with life outside off the court as well. So, but I know that he had that additional pressure to deal with at home. So I'm thankful that Kekua is fine and Charlie's back on it and the team's going better. I also wanted to add about Santa Barbara. I feel like they're the secret ops team operating in the darkness. No one knows what's happening, but everyone knows that they're good and they're lethal, you know? Like, everyone's like, we don't know how Santa Barbara's gonna look like. You know, they're practicing in some small gym at Santa Barbara City College right down the road.
Yeah.
You know, do we know their first match?
Kinda, but I don't know if I can say.
Got it. Sounds good.
It's not
public. Are we on double secret probation? Like, what's going on over here?
Oh, it's more, everything is because of COVID protocols, because of the timing of testing, especially for UC and being in the venue last night. And you got to see what they're doing. They've got their sanitizer flamethrowers going through the match. They got people wiping everything down. And I think it's why they're allowed to play with no masks, because of how high the protocols are. And my guess is the matches for Santa Barbara are going to be very similar, and they've got to get all these protocols down before.
I'm confused, and please forgive me, but so the Big West Conference is allowing your players to play without masks, but the Big Ten Conference is not allowing their players to play with masks. And you're telling me the Big Ten doesn't have the resources that the Big West does? This is the confusion that I have, and pardon me for a small rant here, but it's complete BS.
How are you being safe?
Hats off to the Big West. I'm stoked you guys are doing it. I don't understand how the rest of the country can't figure this out. If the Big West can do it on their dime, on their budget, the rest of the country can do it. And even if we don't have fans at the match for whatever reason, it hurts the players to play with masks. I think they do the best they can, but we're constantly getting reminded about not pulling the mask down and not pulling on to breathe. It's like, can we just go back to some normalcy, please?
Yeah. I did get a photo sent to me. Oh, hey, your guy's mask is down. I'm like, come on, the guy's at the service line.
Yeah.
So anyway,
irritating to say the least.
Just have them wear pantyhose over their head.
And a couple of oranges in the toes, so it flops around a little bit when you're.
And then go to a 7-Eleven afterwards and see how that works.
Whoa, we are not advocating for armed robberies. Please. And all hate mail to that guy right there.
Well, let's conclude with David Hunter Pepperdine, his outside perspective of the Big West and what's happening there.
Well, I'm a little bit confused because the announcer last night made a point of saying this is not a Big West match. We just have two Big West teams. So I don't know if I can refer to it as, you know, Big West playing. But
okay. That guy's a total like goof anyways.
Yeah. So yeah. Nobody listens to that guy.
Hey, don't sell yourself short, Rob. You're a tremendous slouch.
I'm excited to see Hawaii play San Diego just to sort of measure, you know, is it Hawaii, is that good? Was it Irvine just can't pass or set a ball? I don't know. They have some guys that can hit the ball for sure. And then, yeah, I thought the lineup Irvine ended with was by far their best lineup. And then San Diego, Jay hit it on the head with them. You know, for a while, Kevin's been fighting an uphill battle. He's done a great job. But, you know, have they caught some people off guard the last few years from just the perception, the overall perception of, oh, San Diego's not that good. They're not that good, even though they're a talented team. So can they continue the trend upward? Or is it, you know, once you've sort of made it to the next level, it's hard to stay up there. I don't really know. That's sort of one of the coaching conundrums that we'll figure out. So, and then Santa Barbara is my dark horse, but not a dark horse. I think they're damn good. They got a lot of volleyball players that are fifth and sixth year guys that can play the game. So don't be shocked if there being some good teams down the road.
Not Dark Horse, Secret Ops. We know
that. Secret Ops, my bad. Yeah.
Hey, we've got our lightning round of user solicited questions, aka Volley Talk trollers. Well, they're nice guys on there. I know they're on there. But they had questions for you guys, the experts. I haven't called you the triple C I guys yet, but we'll just say here's question number one. Lightning round, 1 minute each. Ready? Is it an advantage or disadvantage that some schools allow or have the capability of video challenges? We'll go with Dave first to Dan to Jay.
I don't think it's an advantage. It's nice. It definitely decreases my anxiety. Knowing that I can just challenge, and if I get it right, then we're good. I think men's volleyball actually has it the right way. If we get the challenge correct, we keep it, and then we keep rolling. So that's the big one for me. It's not an advantage, but it's a nice luxury.
All right, Dan, jump in.
Oh, extra timeouts, advantage, no brainer. Do you know what I mean? So, like, game's close. I don't have any timeouts. I got two challenges. I think I was in the net. Come on, I'm challenging right now. So,
Jay, knock it.
Leave it to Dan to cheat around the system. Listen, if you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing.
JD, right? Southside Chicago.
Yeah, no. Listen, it's obviously an advantage. I think it also makes for calmer heads during matches. If coaches know that they can have a chance to get the call right and then not lose their mind on a referee who may not have seen what was going on, I think it's obviously an advantage on either way. We're hoping to get in our gym soon, too.
All right.
I love the politically correct answer. Good job, Jay. I like it.
Well, at least it ain't cheating. At least I'm not using it to cheat to get an extra timeout.
Jay, he's known for his political correctness. That's for sure.
Oh, I know. I can flip up a conversation here. So,
don't ever let it be said that I'm politically correct.
All right, next question. So many two-point set wins and several sets going OT. Is it unequal early? Is it unequal early season chemistry? And in parentheses, they have disparity between the amount of practice time as a unit or actual parity. We'll go with Dan on this one.
Parity. You got a lot of great players that are back in terms of fifth years or sixth years. And I think you're going to continue to see a lot of great volleyball where maybe teams are down 0-2 and they come back and win in five, or these close set games that are going extra points. And it'll be awesome. Lots of great volleyball to watch. And a lot of those things are going to be happening.
All right. Let's go to Dave.
Yeah, I'm with Dan. Parity and familiarity as we play these teams multiple times.
And then to Jay.
I think not only are there a lot of deuce games, there's a lot of blowout games. You know, there's been a few teams that haven't gotten above 10 in some of those sets. And I think it has to do with no fall practice or matches.
Or above six. Yep.
and the ability for teams to figure things out before they get into the meat of their season. So, yeah, I think parity for sure, but I think it's also that everybody's still trying to figure things out.
All right. Final question, our lightning round. Here we go. Let's see. As a proponent of growing the men's game in the Southern U.S., would they consider playing an event in the South similar to the events in Nashville a few years back? We'll start with Dave on this one.
1,000%. And actually, we've been approached by somebody a few times about going and playing in Texas. So we've tried, to make that maybe at the Southwest qualifier or around that same time period. So there's a lot of people that are trying to grow the game, a lot of teams that are interested in doing it. I don't know if it'll happen this upcoming year because I don't know if any of us know our budgets or the implications of COVID on budgets in the upcoming years. But I think everyone would be open to that for sure.
Go to Dan on this one.
Hey, we'll go meet you in Texas. I got some Texas kids. So yeah, 100%.
Here we go.
I think that would be great. I think you've seen with the historical Black college, the SIAC growth, that's going to help with some of the South games as well. And you're going to see some teams hoping them and possibly traveling down there to get some matches as well. And so, yeah, for sure.
And then over to Jay.
We'll be the third team to join you in Texas if we get that invite. And listen, I mean, how cool would it be to play matches in New Orleans? How cool would it be to play matches in Florida? How cool would it be to, you know, maybe go to Mississippi or go to Alabama or somewhere there's no boys volleyball and you go out there and show the people what it looks like at the highest levels? I mean, that'd be really, really cool. I don't think there's a coach in the country that wouldn't want to be a part of that if they could.
I've got to add one more just because it'd be a great way to end this segment of our lightning round here. What do we have to do this season to make sure men's NCAA volleyball gets the attention and viewership it deserves? We will start with, we'll go with Dan on this one.
Watch the viral podcast and talk Rob stuff on social media. What are you talking about? No, I just.
What about Vinny? You got Vinny and all those other guys too. Yeah. Volleyball Mag, got to pump them all.
You got to pump them all and share that stuff and share it on your Instagram and your Twitter and Facebook or whatever social media stuff you're using. That's how we keep that stuff flowing. Do you know what I mean? And all those coaches, I mean, and I'm not a big social platform guy at sometimes, but we all have to do our part. And I think that'll help continue to put the game out in front of people.
Yep. We'll go to a Jay and then end with Dave.
Yeah, without question. Watch everything you can. Everything's online nowadays. You can watch it on ESPN Plus. You can watch it on Big Ten Network, Pac-12 Network. You can do it all. And the more viewership they get, the more they like what's going on and the more they want to do it in the future. So get out there, watch matches from across the country. It's not that expensive. Grab a couple beverages of your choice and enjoy the volleyball.
And we'll go to Dave.
I just refer to our ABCA rep, you know, the guy in charge there for growing the game. So, yeah, I direct all your questions to him.
That's great. Thanks. There you go.
All right, gentlemen, thanks for participating in our fan solicited questions in our lightning round at the suggestion of Jay. I like that. Encourage more questions. I'll be posting on Volley Talk, but you're also welcome to message me on social. You'll see it in the video handles, or you can go right to these coaches because they're on social as well. Gentlemen, I appreciate your time this week. Good luck in your matches. Looking forward to catching all of you. I actually have a week off because no one's playing, so I'll just be watching your guys' matches online. So we've got David Hunt of Pepperdine, Dan Friend of Lewis, Jay Hossick of George Mason. I'm Rob on the mic. Thanks for clicking in. And be sure to follow their program. Support them. It's a passive way to do it. Like, follow, share, do all that stuff. Watch their streams. And you can get multiple screens. That's what's awesome about it. So, hey, gentlemen, have a good week. We will speak soon.
See ya.
See you, Rob.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Viral Volley Podcast Podcast. Be sure to follow Rob at Rob on the Mic on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or at robonthemic.com. Check you next time.